It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, full disclosure up front, for reasons that I kind of understand and others I don't, I got just a phenomenally small amount of sleep last night. So did Trish.
Oh.
And so I have a bad headache and everything feels bleh and I don't know what's going on.
Okay.
So this is going to be a really shitty episode is what I'm saying.
Well.
And I just want to preface that up front.
It's a pretty low bar anyway, so.
Yeah, no. I'm going to bury it deep. Anyway, as this is the last episode of 2018,
yes,
I would like to start with what has always been a family New Year's tradition for me. Maybe it's true for you. I don't know. Is the traditional New Year's Golden Girls Mad Lib.
Okay. Let's do
you
it.
You know, like we start. So, anything I'm into.
Yeah, Golden Girls, Mad Lib. I see it. Nice.
We're going to start with a part of the body, if you would, please.
The nose?
Nose, all right. Okay. An adjective?
Big?
Big. Big is an adjective. All right, I can take that. Occupation?
Physician.
Physician. This is the point at which people are supposed to be like, oh, it's getting good. But actually, no, you picked a pretty mundane one there. It's not that great. verb. Verb.
Run.
All right. Animal.
Cat.
All right. I have trouble now in that I haven't done these in so long. I keep just wanting to read the sentence. And I'm like, no, that's not the point.
You can't do that.
Type of food.
Type of food.
Fruit? Type of food.
Like fruit or like a specific fruit?
I'd get more specific.
Apple.
All right. Noun.
Box.
Box. All right. And adjective?
Slow.
Slow. That seems good. All right. Noun?
Sock.
All right. All right. Noun, and before you answer, I should say there's a lot riding on this particular one to make it funny. So
okay.
Choose carefully. just saying.
A microphone.
This is really sort of the heart of the whole bit.
Microphone.
All right, all right. Poor choice there.
Well, I don't know.
It's all falling apart.
Maybe I should have asked you.
All right, another noun? This one doesn't matter.
Hat.
Hat, all right. Oh, yeah, but you couldn't have picked that one before. Oh, jeez. All right, and one more noun. At this point, it's just all a mess, so whatever, I don't care.
Car.
Car, all right. Whoa, that might actually save this. All right, we'll see here. This particular Golden Girls Mad Lib is called Out on the Lanai. And I don't know if we're all familiar. Lanai is actually a Hawaiian word.
Uh-huh.
I don't know what it originally means,
okay.
But white people use it to refer to a porch or a balcony or things like that. In Golden Girls parlance, that is their sort of porch area.
Okay.
They have an outside area with chairs and chaise lounges,
like
and things.
Like a patio type of thing?
Very much like a patio, yes.
Okay.
But it's sort of covered, like there's growth around it, so it's sort of private, I guess. But yeah.
Okay.
But outside. All right.
Okay.
You would think that the girls' lanai would be the perfect place to relax and clear your nose. But it seems that something big is always happening out there.
Mm.
Like when Blanche hires a stripper dressed as a physician to run at Dorothy's bridal shower. A man in a cat costume parachutes down, thinking he is at the Apple Bowl.
Apple Bowl.
Rose sees a box in the night sky and thinks it's a UFO. Dorothy and Miles get swept away in the slow moonlight and share a forbidden sock. That sounds really unwholesome. Sophia puts a Sicilian microphone on the neighbor after his hat crashes onto their car. There we go.
A Sicilian microphone.
Yes.
That's clearly a euphemism of some kind.
Yes. What's the matter? You want a Sicilian microphone?
It's like taking it to the mattresses or whatever. It's
yes. What? Taking it to the mattresses? I don't think that's a thing. I think you made that one up.
No. I probably said it wrong, but it's in...
Sleep with the Fishes, Concrete Overshoes.
No, this is in The Godfather.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's something about... I forget even what it means. Mm. Something about mattresses. A listener knows what I'm talking about can clarify.
Yes,
for me.
Yes, Agitalon, clean this up. But not on Facebook. He sends me the worst stuff on Facebook. also, he sent a thing that he thought you would appreciate on Facebook, and I'm like, he absolutely would. I don't know why you're sending it to me. Anyway, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, Golden Girls Mad Libs Edition. The only podcast in the world that's doing Golden Girls Mad Libs. I'm confident.
Yeah,
we're the only one in the world.
You're probably right.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 407.
For those of you just joining us, we do Golden Girls Mad Libs for about an hour. That's the show. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, nice people, New Year's people, write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. Don't look at the cat. Pay attention.
But the
We're
cat's
doing a podcast.
Doing something interesting.
Don't.
It's more interesting than what you're doing.
How very dare you. I don't even remember where I was. I'm going to have to start over.
All right.
There's a Thomas Middleditch is doing commercials for Verizon lately.
Oh, okay.
And Thomas Middleditch is kind of funny, so that's fun. But there's one recently where the straight man, who's this woman that plays off of him in all the commercials, is walking with a young girl, and the young girl is like emphasizing what he's saying, and like she gets it, you know, and she's something like, oh, I like free, and he's like, I like popcorn, and he grabs one of her pieces of popcorn out of it, and the woman's like, wow, didn't even ask, and the little girl says, how dare you, in like a very like creepy voice. Like, out of nowhere, and it's beautiful. And the first time, I wasn't even looking at the screen or paying attention, and I just hear this little kid go, how dare you? Like, that's awesome. Anyway, people write in to the email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. Its effervescent servants draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. Oh my God, there's a Mad Libs app. Holy shit. do that for about an hour. That's the whole show. Except the parts that aren't, which is most of it. I think I forgot the bit where we talk about it till we're bored. Anyway, very tired. So, how was your Christmas holiday extravaganza?
Now I have, like, tons more books that I have to
That you won't
out.
Read?
Sometime. I will read them.
Who the hell's getting you books? People that have never met you?
Well, most of them are not fiction. So
oh, then there's a shot.
It's reasonable for them to, I think, I'll read
them.
And I do look forward to reading them.
The thing Agitalon sent that he thought you'd like was this picture. It was basically... life-size, fully armored knight in gingerbread, and then a lot of puns about that.
That does sound very entertaining.
And guarding the Candy Kingdom and all sorts of things. Well, like it was very on brand for your new
Dave posted,
weird Cronenbergian role-playing game.
Dave posted something to my wife's Facebook, hoping I would see it, where a gingerbread man is sitting in a gingerbread house.
Mm.
And he can't figure out if the house is made of flesh or if,
right?
or if he's made of house.
Right.
And so he screams at the end. It's pretty hilarious.
Me and my boss were basically just talking about how disturbed we were by the whole concept.
Well.
They're mining flesh out of the ground, but eventually it sort of heals.
See, they don't think about it like
and
that.
And they build their houses out of flesh.
They don't think about it like that. Or they might
not.
Because
they've been conditioned.
I mean, maybe if you were playing it, you would, and that would be interesting. But I didn't really conceive of them thinking of it that way. Plus,
all is cookie.
Plus, they're making gingerbread people, and as long as they don't put a candy heart in them, they ship them off for people to eat.
You didn't even mention that part before.
Yeah.
That is super fucked up.
The good news is,
on the other hand, if we could get that to where we could, like, give birth to cows that never were alive, and then that would be our beef source, that would be really useful. But it's a little weirder when it's the people that you talk to and shit. Like,
well, they don't think of it as a living thing until they put a candy heart in it. And then it's a person, and you wouldn't ship that off to be eaten. Of course not.
Life begins at inception, incepting the candy heart inside.
And they have animals in Gingerbread Land, but they also, to be living, have to have a heart, so they talk, and so they, you know, they wouldn't ship those off to be eaten either.
Does anybody do, like, mad science shit? So, like, there's living ones that just have, like, limbs in the wrong places and stuff like that?
I don't know. Maybe.
We got the little legless
maybe
gingerbread dude with, like, can you get stuff grafted on later?
Well.
And then you could build, like, a giant.
Sure, absolutely. And.
Like how Transformers turn into one giant robot.
And
or,
if
like,
you,
a Megazord.
If you were injured,
gingerbread
as long
sword.
As your heart is intact. They can build a new you and put the heart in there, and then you'll be fine. But they could build a new you completely different than the you that was before, but the heart that goes in there is you.
And then we put in, like, multiple hearts, and then Lee Majors does the voice.
Multiple hearts. I don't know. I didn't really think of that.
Do you know that Lee Majors is currently doing the voice of a $6 million man action figure in a car commercial?
Nope, I didn't know that.
I feel sad about that.
It sounds like a cool commercial, though.
It's basically he's like, "Hi, I'm $6 million man. Remember how cool I was? Well, now we have technology in cars, and it's really cool." and occasionally the sound effect, and like that's it.
Still sounds cool. I liked watching the $6 million.
How dare you!
I liked watching it.
I did too. I loved it. I was convinced that if I moved really slow and made that noise, I was actually moving really fast.
My brother had an action figure, and, you know, could lift an engine. And if you looked in the back, there was a little hole in his head. And if you looked through it, you could see through his eye.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Bionic Woman had a thing on her forearm that you could open a panel.
Yeah,
and there were wires in
he
there.
He did, too. $6 Million Man did, too. Yep.
So how was your Christmas?
Yeah. Well, aside from the books, there was a lot of Red Dead Redemption. Play.
Two.
Yeah.
Electric Boogaloo.
And that's been fun. What else? Mostly just that. my wife got a book with Norse like legends and stuff in
it.
because she a lot of her ancestral background is like, you know, in Denmark and in Scandinavia and stuff. And but she doesn't know a whole lot about the Norse myths and stuff, so she was interested just as, you know, what kind of things did her ancestors believe. So she's
Norse
been
myths are hardcore.
They are
some
kind of
brutal motherfucking
they are kind
myths.
Of. But anyway, she's been reading. She's been when we were traveling for. She actually got this around Thanksgiving, and so when we drove to down, you know, 100 miles home and 100 miles back, she read from it like out loud. Same for Christmas, and we've spent a couple evenings with her just reading it out loud. For one thing, I'm kind of interested to know what kind of things they're covering in the book, because I'm a little familiar with the material. But also, I think she thinks she'll remember it better if she reads it out loud.
Yeah.
So that's been kind of a fun thing that we've been doing. I know that you read out loud.
I do.
Does Trish read you too, or just?
She used to. I think I more specifically enjoy the act of reading out loud, and she has a lot more things she can do
while I'm reading.
She'll knit and stuff like that. If she's reading to me, there's very little I know what to do, like with my hands or anything like that.
I'm not normally a fan of being read to, but for whatever reason, this has been really fascinating for both of us. And if, sometimes we pause to talk about, you know, what she's just read to get some clarification, or we'll pause and look some things up if we're confused about something, like on our phones or whatever. So it's been really interesting. It's been kind of fun. But we had Christmas on Saturday.
Yes.
And
because you're Seventh Day Adventist.
No. The family had too many other obligations. And so for Christmas Eve and Christmas, we were just home doing things by ourselves, and that was nice. Thursday after I left here, I went to see Aquaman.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. I forgot about that.
And we liked it a lot. She'd like to see it again. And I've been reading reviews and stuff. Like, I like to read the negative reviews. Like, what didn't they like? And sometimes I'm like, yeah, I can see their point with that or whatever. But most of, like, I read one review, and it was really strange. It described the opening scenes, basically.
Okay.
And then in one paragraph, and then it started, the second paragraph was, does that sound really weird to you? Well, it was. Except the description didn't sound anything to me like what the movie, how the movie started. And I'm thinking, this person tried really hard to make this sound weird when it wasn't. I don't know why they would have even seen it that way. And I read a few other things, and I just thought, man, it just seems like people want to hate this movie. It's not perfect by any means, and it's James Wan. So if anyone's familiar with James Wan's work.
So it's very like The Conjuring, is what you're saying. Is there an evil nun in this one?
No.
Damn.
James Wan.
Jason Momoa. As
when he picks
nun.
A script, he picks a script based on, will this work for me to make something visual out of this?
Yeah.
I don't think he evaluates it on...
Is this a good story?
Well, whatever, right? Yeah, it's not... He doesn't evaluate it the way you might or the way I might. It's like, can I...
I've always felt that my sensibilities with regard to scripts was different from James Wan.
Well,
ever since I was a kid.
I mean the way we're used to people doing it. And I'm not sure, though, because when I watch... because I've had the opportunity, because my wife likes this kind of stuff, like Korean horror movies or Korean monster movies.
Yeah.
and also some Chinese and Japanese. So I've been getting a lot of Asian, you know, subtitled or dubbed stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems to me that's a very typical way for Asian filmmakers to approach. That I get the impression sometimes that if they didn't have to have a script, they wouldn't even have one. That the script is the least important bit. And all the script has to do is give them the bits and pieces they need to get to that visual stuff that they want to portray. And so the script isn't really important. And so it's not that they shoot bad scripts. It's that they have a different way of evaluating what a script needs to do.
I'm always amazed at how my brain decides when I'm okay with that and when I'm not. Because there are definite films or TV shows where I'm like, I couldn't watch it because the story was dumb as hell or whatever. And then there are other ones where I'm like, I really liked it. The story was dumb as hell, but just the visuals on it were... And it doesn't mean, ooh, pretty effects, but just like it moved me visually for some reason.
Right.
So there are some times where I readily forgive... that the script or the story didn't work for me, and other times where I hate something specifically because of that, and I have yet to determine what determines that in my brain.
Well, I think for me, what...
I mean, other than obviously it has to be good visually.
Well, right. I think for me it comes down to, are the visuals telling a story at all, right? If it's kind of like if I were watching a film and I didn't understand what people were saying in the script, but I could still understand what's going on.
Yeah.
And I mean, not just plot-wise, but the emotional beats.
Best exemplified in the movie My Neighbor Totoro.
Oh, because you're saying the visuals tell the
story. I'm just saying the first time I ever saw that movie was in Japanese with no subtitles, and I still loved it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I'm talking about. Now, I feel like James Wan, all of James Wan's stuff it's pretty typical for the scripts to be not very good. But
see, and this explains why I see the trailers for The Conjuring and it looks really interesting.
Yeah.
And then I read the synopses of The Conjuring movies and I'm like, this is dumb.
Well, no, I agreed. But somehow, but James Wan, again, when he picks a script, I think the way he picks it is not, he doesn't use the same criteria that I think most Western, I don't think it's just you and me. I think it's like most Western script, directors are going to pick a script maybe that has a certain literary value according to Western standards. And he's not worried about that, I don't think. What he's worried about is, does the script give him the visual ideas for him to tell the story visually? Because when you see, at least when I see a James Wan film, I get the story visually. Okay. Script-wise, I'm not very impressed, and it doesn't really work for me. But visually, and not just visually with like effects or something like that, but what the character, more how the characters are saying things than what they're saying, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
The relationships the characters have, everything works basically, except if you're going to be very literary about the script, it's going to really disappoint you.
So what I'm hearing is that the script for Aquaman is not that good.
There are places where it's actually quite good, but it's really, if you go to it and you just let yourself absorb the story visually, I think you'll like it.
Well, and also, barring Wonder Woman, it doesn't have a lot of competition. Like, all it has to be is better than Batman v Superman and Suicide
True.
Squad.
True. Well, and see, this was another thing.
It can already be the best DC movie, the second best DCU movie.
Yeah, but this was another thing about it that was kind of confused me with the people criticizing it was most of the things they criticized, it seemed like, well, that's true about MCU movies, too. I mean, I didn't go see how that particular person thought about Avengers or Black Panther or anything, but I thought these criticisms are pretty much the same criticisms you could levy against any comic book movie. In fact, some of the criticisms made me think, you know, this is a comic book movie, right? I mean, there are some things about comic book movies that
is
are
it,
pretty standard.
Is it not doing well critically?
No.
I don't. All I've heard is that it's number one at the box office.
No, well, its Rotten Tomatoes score is just barely in the fresh zone. It's like 60-something, 63.
That's not bad for a superhero movie.
Well, but I think it's a lot lower than it deserves to be, honestly. I think so. And the audience score is higher, and it's doing very well in the box office. However, you know, it opened in China like 2 weeks before here.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost hit, I mean, it was like 400,000 just from China.
You mean 400 million?
I'm sorry. Yes.
400,000 would not be that exciting
in China.
Sorry.
400,000.
I'm pretty sure I made a movie that made 400,000 in China.
I've got my wires crossed here. Because I was thinking that what I was going to say was it almost hit half a billion. So, and there are some people that think it will make a billion.
Yeah.
It'll be in the billion-dollar club. Well, but it's going to be heavily, if it makes it, the split between domestic and foreign is going to be heavily weighed toward the foreign. And so it makes you wonder, why is that? Why would that be? Now,
Chinese people love Jason Momoa.
Well, part of it is, I find this true whenever I watch any foreign film, it doesn't matter what language it's in. Since I'm watching, reading subtitles or whatever, I can't really evaluate the script as much, right? So if the script is bad, how am I going to know? Right? I mean, I'm not going to evaluate the subtitles.
This is like how when people are acting in languages I don't understand, I can't tell if they're a bad actor.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. So you can understand why a movie that we might think is not very good would play well overseas. But here's another thing. Another thing I hear people saying is they're comparing it to Wonder Woman and they're comparing it to...
the other shitty DC movies?
No, Black Panther.
Oh, okay.
And they're saying that you know, part of what helped both of those films, you know, cultural moment, they say. It was a cultural moment. And I totally agree that when a film has, you know, creates a cultural moment, that's a perfectly valid reason for it to be successful. Now, maybe 20 years from now, that people won't be thinking in those terms and they'll have to evaluate on based on something different.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing about cultural moment. This is the first superhero, you know, lead who is, mixed race Pacific Islander.
Yeah.
And for Pacific Islanders, I've seen some things online. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
So why isn't it also a cultural moment? I mean, isn't that important too?
To Pacific Islanders, which is a pretty small percentage of the population.
But I mean, to people who care about representation like I do, it's every bit as big a deal. Seems like it should be every bit as big a deal.
Most people, as with The Rock, consider Jason Momoa to basically be a white guy.
Oh, well, okay. I mean, the Pacific Islanders who are enjoying it don't.
Absolutely. As I said, most people.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
And I mean, we all know he's not, but in terms of political issues, in terms of privilege and so forth, people don't tend to think that Jason Momoa has suffered much for his Pacific Island heritage or The Rock.
I mean, he grew up in Iowa because his mom's Iowan from south of Des Moines there, same town that Brandon Routh came from. I think they're about the same age. I don't know what his experience was like.
He also apparently did the haka to get his role on Game of Thrones.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Khal Drogo, the auditions, you couldn't speak because he was never going to speak in English. And they didn't tell you what to, they just told you the characters and just do something. So he fucking did the haka, and it bowled him over.
he and several people did it at the premiere.
Yeah, I heard about that too.
And he, apparently it was very moving for him.
What's
personally
really weird is there's a video on YouTube from the 1960s or whatever, and the New Zealand World Cup team exclusively made of the most thin, pale, Britishy, colonizing looking motherfuckers you've ever seen, all doing the haka, and it just doesn't look right.
Oh my god. That's terrible.
It's from New Zealand. They're from New Zealand, born and raised, so I'm like, okay, I guess, but it just looks really strange.
Well, anyway, we liked it. I mean, it's hard for me to recommend it. I mean, the Rotten Tomatoes audience score is pretty high. I would say people should go see it. There's one commentator who I think has got the right idea who's comparing it to Avatar, where Avatar was visually stunning. You know, it's definitely a thing you want to go see in the movie, but Avatar's script was crap. I mean, I think everybody thinks that's
true. However, that's a dangerous comparison because Avatar is something you want to see on the big screen, you want to see it once, and then you never want to see it again, and you never want there to be sequels because there's absolutely no point. And actually, Avatar script was crap to the point of being offensive.
That's true.
Hopefully this isn't, although I have seen some signs of people trying to show that this is actually a weird movie about racial segregation, and that I think the Atlanteans that Jason Momoa is up against are sort of substitute for white nationalists in a weird way. I don't know. I didn't read the articles because I'm like, I haven't seen the movie. So
well, someone said, and I agreed with this, is they, of course, in the movie, Arthur Curry, that's Aquaman's real name, his father is... he's the actor, I think, is a New Zealander, is played by but he's playing an American in the movie. But anyway, he's got a Pacific Island heritage, obviously, from his father, his surface dwelling father. But his Atlantean side is his mother's played by Nicole Kidman, and most of and his brother's a blonde white guy.
Yeah,
and so someone said they should have reversed that. You know, the Atlanteans should have been like Pacific Islanders. and the lighthouse keeper should have been a white guy. And that is how they should have done it.
Would have involved casting a lot more Pacific Islanders, and they're not willing to do that.
You know, are they not willing to, or is there some practical block to that?
No, it doesn't happen.
That's too bad.
Look at Last Airbender. Look at
every
movie.
True,
like, I count it lucky that Black Panther had so many black people.
Yeah, right.
In it.
No, you're right. That's right.
Admittedly, it's partially because we had Ryan Coogler directing, but.
But I thought Mira was great in it. That's another thing. Mira was very good. They, it was another female character that the camera didn't exploit. With lewd camera angle.
This is not a good time to sniff.
And
microphone.
Amber Heard did a good job, I thought.
Nice.
Everyone did a good job. Nicole Kidman did a great job. Willem Dafoe. I mean, I don't know. I think it's worth seeing, but I'm afraid I'm going to tell people, hey, go see this, and they'll see it and hate it. So I don't know what to think.
I don't know why you should be afraid of that.
Well, my wife loved it. And like I said, we might even see it again, but I don't know. She's already got a Mira a 10-inch action figure.
Nice.
Because she thought Mira was so great. So, yeah, that was fun. But anyway, you probably have a lot to talk about for Christmas. You traveled and probably got a lot of stuff, like your Mad Libs thing there.
I got Golden Girls Mad Libs. Ah, get off the cord. Ugh, stop ruining things, you cat.
You cat. What an insult.
So, yeah, spent 5 nights with my in-laws, with my family. Surprisingly really cool.
Why is it surprising?
Because it's always mixed. I'm not a big spend time with the family kind of person.
Right. You've said that.
But, like, it was a really good time. Like, I didn't get any writing done, and I don't even feel bad about that. And, like, it's not even that I was, like, procrastinating or anything. We were just doing other things
doing
and
things,
having
yeah.
a good time. We played D&D.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
First time ever my sister-in-law GM'd. She did really well. The kids really ate it up. Surprisingly, it was mostly for the 14-year-old, but the 11-year-old really got into it, like, a lot. Like, she may have to take him to her weekly gaming group thing, like, because he's so into it. And it was pretty fun. I think we're going to do it again, like, when we get together in the future. I'm playing an elven cleric, our wood elven cleric, named Woe, spelled W-O-O.
Oh.
Woe.
Whoa.
And as kind of expected, he's a little bit Deus Ex Machina in places.
Sure.
Woe, like, has all sorts of weird, like, hidden history and stuff like that just comes up whenever it's useful.
Sure, sure.
like
modern blockbusters.
But, actually, I keep thinking back to that fucker in Star Crash who had the lightsaber and everything, who just always knew what was going to happen and then for no reason near the end died because he had to die at that time. Like, that's how I feel like, well, I'm like, at a certain point, what was going to be? And so that was really fun. And through that, I've talked about this before. My niece is 14. She's awkward around me, her 41-year-old uncle. I get that.
Sure.
I absolutely get that for a lot of reasons. I feel like this is one of the first times we were able to sort of interact for a while through this, and that was kind of cool. And just the whole thing was cool. I also ended up having a talk of probably like 2 or 3 hours with my Pentecostal brother-in-law that was really good. And we talked about some serious stuff in this. Because as I've said before, people who have more broad and progressive religious views than him have treated me way worse.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he really is in the, like, he absolutely thinks I'm going to hell and, like, all that kind of business, but he absolutely believes first and foremost that you love people, and so, like, he is totally accepting of me and fine, and we can have great talks about stuff. And also, in theory, his church is about to have the first ever black pastor in Chillicothe, Illinois.
Wow.
And so I think that's really cool, and I told him that's a big deal. And he's been surprised because other people in the community have looked with at least some surprise that they would entertain that possibility, and he did not expect that. And I'm like, this is an important thing to pay attention
to.
Yeah,
it is.
Like, your personal experience may not be all that you're seeing there.
Yeah.
But he and I had some great talks about that. Discovered a really cool game called Splendor. It's a cardboard game thing.
Okay.
That is all about being a jewel merchant and trying to trade for various jewels. And it's one of those incredibly easy to learn games, incredibly hard to master. Was later trying to explain it because I taught my brother-in-law. We'd been playing it for a couple of days and then he wanted to play. And I was explaining, and there's so many rules where I'm like, and you can do this, and we haven't yet figured out if it's advantageous to do that or not. We've been experimenting with it. But it's very easy to learn, and I feel like, because I worry about games like this, Because it's sort of a set building game. Like you use these jewels to buy these cards that give you other jewels and things. And I'm like, this is going to be fun until somebody figures out the way to do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there's a pretty heavily random element because cards just come off of a pile and they've been shuffled. Mm. And I think that helps because I've noticed, like, we've been trying different things, and there are certain times where a certain tactic will not work, and, like, you're missing all of this kind of card, and that really changes the whole thing. So I'm hoping it'll keep going. I'm going to go buy it this weekend because it's really cool. Called Splendor, 2 to 4 players. It's very quick. It's like a 30-minute game. I also am convinced it would not be nearly so compelling if it had different trappings. The fact that you're doing things with sapphires and rubies makes you feel really cool. You're like, I'm going to buy this with my 3 rubies. Mm. And I'm like, if it was my 3 dog bones, I don't think I would be nearly as excited. So I think that is part of it. I feel really impressive because I'm trading jewels around.
Right, right.
But it's really fun. I played it a bunch while we were there.
2 people can play.
Yes, yes. And it's essentially the same game. Like, a lot of games have a 2-player version, but, like, you heavily modify it.
Oh, yeah.
This game, the only thing that changes where it's 2 players, 3 players, or 4 players is how many of each thing you use. Like, certain counters and things. Like, if it's 4 players, you'll have a bunch, and if it's 3, you'll have a little less. And
okay.
That's the only difference. Huh. And otherwise, it's the exact same game. And it's really funny, because we played it for a while as 4, and then a little as 3. And then me and my sister-in-law played it as 2. And we had already played it several times. It was a totally different game, and it was very quiet and very fast.
Mm.
We're just, like, just moving things around, not even speaking. It was very quick, but still very cool. I enjoyed that, too. So, yeah, I'm definitely going to try and pick it up.
I'll have to remember that one.
We finally finished the season of Doctor Who, except, of course, the New Year's Day special is coming on New Year's Day. Oh. It didn't have a Christmas special this year. They're having a New Year's Day special.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know why the difference, but that's what they're doing.
Interesting.
I love this season of Doctor Who. I love the new Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. I love the new companions.
Mm-hmm.
I am very excited to see more of both this cast and this showrunner.
Mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed this season. I do have to say, I feel like you can tell this is an immature showrunner.
Mm.
I like where they're going. I like their direction. I was sick to death of Moffat. But Moffat had the shit down to a science.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And even on the level of Doctor Who, and that's saying something, a lot of episodes have been very hand-wavy or, like, arbitrarily restricted. There's been a lot of, why don't they just, in a lot of episodes, or why would they even have bothered to,
right.
A lot of those going on.
Right.
But I think that's a, you know, getting a hold of the reins for the first time kind of thing. And I'm confident it's going to get better.
Good.
And I like where it's going. And so I've been very pleased.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to seeing it whenever we can, whenever that is.
Well, let's finish it up now. So it'll probably pop up someplace soon.
Well, hope so.
Because mostly they only worry about that when they think it'll take away from people actually watching it.
Yeah, right.
Also, last night, pure random chance. Not pure random chance, but we happened to watch a thing last night. Pete Holmes has a new special on HBO called Dirty Clean, which is very him. It's pretty hilarious. It's a little different now because he's married now and has a baby now.
Oh.
And when this happened, he had a baby like a month ago.
Mm.
And so that's very different because a lot of his stuff is, you know, being single and how that works and all that. And now he's very different. I laughed my ass off. I feel myself disengaging from Pete Holmes a little bit. He's still funny. I don't necessarily relate to him as directly anymore.
Mm.
Back in the day, I very much, a lot of myself matched a lot of his self, and I'm feeling that less as time is going on.
Interesting.
But it was still hilarious. I laughed out loud a ton. I highly recommend that special. It's only an hour long. If you got HBO, it's just called Dirty Clean, and it's pretty funny. And it's got a lot of random bits, like in between longer sort of bits he's doing, he just tosses in things. Like one time he's talking about something and he finishes talking about that and he says, did you know that the movie Three Amigos, when it was released in Spanish speaking countries, was released as Tres Friends?
Is that true?
I have no idea. But Trish said out loud, God damn it, Pete. as soon as he said that. And then he went on. Like, he didn't do a thing about that. He said that, and then he went on. And he has a few like that.
Like a palate cleanser.
Like, he has, like, one political joke, and it's very indirect, and it's funny, and it's not, like, I don't feel he, as a heavily left-leaning person, and I kind of feel like he is, too, I don't feel like he wussed out, but on the other hand, it wasn't leftist humor, exactly.
Yeah.
So that was, he just dropped in a lot of those sort of little ones that were pretty good. So yeah, it was very funny. I think I've officially decided I'm going to stop reading The Raven Cycle, which I'm currently reading.
Oh, stop. Why?
I'm not really into it right now. Hmm. I kind of don't care what happens, and there's so much shit I want to be reading right now. I have this collection of Ursula Le Guin essays that I wanted to read anyway, but specifically because a friend of mine thought it was so impressive she bought us all the book. I've actually got a friend who wrote a National Novel Writing Month thing that she wants me to edit, so I want to read that. In addition to really wanting to get to the Dying Earth trilogy by N.K. Jemisin, my parents got me her short story collection called When is Black Future Month, that I really want to read that.
Ooh.
So there's a lot of shit that I'm very interested in right now, and it kind of don't give a shit about what I'm reading. And it's tough to do because I am 1.5 books into a 4-book series, and it is well written, but I'm like, I don't have time. Like, I've told myself, like, I'm never going to read all the books I want to. So if a book is not, I'm not enjoying it.
Yeah, you should stop.
If it's not bringing me joy. Yeah. Oh my God. Do you remember, you live outside of culture, so you might not. There was a woman, I don't remember her name, a little while back, she became a big thing in that she had this method for cleaning and decluttering, which involved taking an object and asking yourself if it brought you joy. Well, and if it didn't, you got rid of it.
I remember Gabby Dunn making fun of that in one of their
videos. Yes. Yeah, That's true. You would have known from that. This is an actual woman. She's this Asian woman. I'm not positive what country she's from, but she's getting a Netflix show to basically help people clean their house. And it's terrifying to me because she's incredibly upbeat and intense. And the whole damn trailer for it's a Netflix thing. And the whole damn trailer involves people talking about, like, you know, like their spouse is dead and they can't bring themselves to get rid of his old clothes and stuff. And then there's this little happy, bouncy Asian lady. And I'm like, oh my God. Because I already am like, fuck off with this method. Like, there is shit I need that brings me no joy.
Yeah.
And there is shit that brings me joy that I still should probably get rid of.
Yeah.
I'm like, I love the sentiment.
Yeah.
But it's a little, just the other day, somebody did the whole, you know, somebody said, my therapist tells me, you know, some of something is better than than none of something.
Yeah.
So if you have something, it's not quite all that you wanted, you know, better to have some. And I was like, that's true. Sometimes. Sometimes some of something is very bad and you would much rather have, like for example, if you want a puppy. Best to have a puppy, better to have no puppy than just some puppy. I mean, that's an extreme example, but this is my point. And at the time, somebody was talking about, like, they wanted a thing in a certain frame. Like, they were going to a certain thing, and they wanted a certain time slot. And they're like, no, it's better if... I know you can't go to that one, but you can go to this one. And it's better to have some of what you want. And they're like, no, because the people that go to this thing, I don't like. And I'm like, okay, then. That would not be
well, like,
good.
Watching half a movie...
Yeah, this is the same kind of thing.
Obviously, that doesn't
apply. Or it's like, I would rather have a party with my friends. Well, you can't have that because of whatever reasons, but we can have a party with people you hate. That's part of what you wanted. Like, it doesn't work.
I'm sure that's not what the therapist
No. And this is the thing. all of these aphorisms and stuff need to have the invisible parenthetical in certain circumstances. And it's the same thing. Find things in your house. See if they give you joy. If not, throw them away. Void where prohibited.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Void where
only available with participating appliances. You know, shit like that. Is my cat dead? He's doing the face plant sleep.
That is weird.
I can't do that. I've tried to do that in my life, and it doesn't work. Cats do it a lot. I've never seen him do it, though. He's doing that. Y'all know the face plant sleep where, like, the cat just has their face in the mat, and, like, they can't be breathing, but somehow they're not dead, and they sleep like that.
And he's not twitching or anything, so you can't...
No, it's like his neck gave out, and he just, bonk, face plant, and that's comfy for him.
That's weird.
I've never seen... I might have to take a picture of that. I've never seen Addy doing...
Out, man.
Yeah, no, he's gone. He doesn't even know we're talking about him.
I mean, when I was...
He's had a busy 24 hours or so, because he lost his ever-loving mind when we came home. He was part of the reason we didn't sleep so good because he was jumping around all last night.
When I was a kid, and, you know, I'd watch the cats on the farm, and they were laying down like they were sleeping. Their ears were still moving. It's like, are you really asleep?
Yeah.
Or what's going on? But his ears aren't moving or anything.
No, he is out and cold.
He is out.
And I guarantee you, if you could sneak over there.
He'd freak out if I got
And, him. Like, touch him, he would jump so high. So we have this game. I call Furfurs, because his middle name is Furfur. And Furfur was a demon, a Duke of Hell, who has 28 legions of demons under his control. So he and I have this thing in the mornings before work, where I kind of wrap my hand in one of the sheets, and we fight.
Mm-hmm.
And he like attacks my hand and freaks out and all that, and he really enjoys that. And that's what Furfur time, because he's being all evil and. Where was I going with this?
I don't know.
Where was I going with
this? I don't
where
know.
Where did we start?
I don't know.
He's had a very tiring time. Oh, no, you were saying... Oh, the cats. I have no idea.
I was talking about the cats on the farm. Their ears would move, but they're supposed to be sleeping.
And I'm like, oh, no, I remember. And I said he would jump if you touched him. So, one time, we're doing furfurs. And he's really going, and he's got, like, he's curled up. I mean, sometimes he gets so excited, he, like, rabbit kicks himself in the face because he gets so excited. But he's really, like, curled around my hand, and he's kicking at it and everything. And so I'm just, like, hold on, and I reach around to just sort of hold him with my other hand. Mm-hmm. We're in the middle of death fight here. Like, he is losing it. He is chewing on my hand. He is rabbit kicking the hell out of it. He is going crazy. He's trying to murder me. I touch him with my other hand. He jumps like a foot off the bed, and then we're done. He's leaving. And I'm like, because I had a second hand? But, like, if he doesn't know what's coming, he will lose his mind.
It's so weird.
Yeah, no. You have to watch the stomach.
It's freaking
Make
me
sure
out,
it's
though.
Still moving.
Freaking me out.
I've seen pictures of cats do it. I've never seen any of our cats do it. Upside down is one that our cats will do. They will, like, hang where they're, like, about to fall off the couch upside down and sleep. And Ezzy, when she was little, would do this one where she's just on her back and all four paws are just out. And she looks like she's playing dead. Oh. But that's how she would sleep. But, yeah, he's doing a face plant sleep. All right, grab the hat because we're going to run out of time here. Oh, he's awake. Oh, the hat got him up.
Oh.
But he is pissed. He's like, I do not want to wake up yet. We call that state Blinkums. When he's not really sure what's going on yet. Say he's Blinkums.
Jazz wants to know.
Oh, Jazz always wants to know.
Jazz sent me this great book about Mary Shelley. I can't wait to read it.
Jazz also sent both of us a video of her.
Her uncles, yeah.
I was going to say her ancestors. I don't remember how far back in the thing. Yep. Doing some... really fucked up circus stuff.
Like, well, it wasn't like contortionist or something. It was balancing stuff, and it was amazing.
And strength stuff. And,
yeah.
But this is the thing. And she tried to explain. I was like, how do you even come up with this? And she's like, well, it's a family thing, and they make them learn this. And I'm like, yeah. But somewhere in the back there, somebody had to say, you know what would be awesome?
And there had to be a lot of falling down.
Balance your head on my groin And then I put my hands forward, and then you lifted my entire body weight with your calves a couple times before we then spun around, and I hold your face with my pinky, and you pirouette on it. Like, we would just have to be incredibly strong with some pretty specific muscles, and I'm pretty sure French people would pay money to see
pretty
it.
Pretty specific
Who
muscles.
Came up with that originally? That's bizarre.
But think of the falls. And they just have Absolutely. To start all over again and keep doing it
this
until
is
it,
why
they didn't fall.
I don't do anything professional physically. Because that's the thing. It's like, oh, I might like to be a professional skateboarder. Yeah, you will fall down 8,000 times. Okay, I might like to be a professional circus anything. Yeah, elephants will kill you at least 3 times before you're any good. Like, no. Like, how many broken things, fucking broken
sure,
things
sure.
happen? Also, that was the most 70s video I've ever seen in my life.
It's pretty good.
Super 70s.
I didn't...
One of the uncles had the 70s stash. They both had the kind of mullet going on.
And the music was...
And the
Jess said the music was Jesus
She
Christ
said it was Jesus Christ Superstar. Superstar. At least one of the songs was from Godspell in there. So there was a whole Christian hip theme in there, I guess.
Well, Jesus Christ Superstar isn't Godspell.
No, Jesus Christ Superstar... is a musical.
Oh, they're separate, yeah.
Godspell is a different musical, and
gotcha.
Gangs fight over which one. You have to be in one crowd or the other. It's the Crips or the Bloods. Are you Jesus Christ Superstar? Or it's Godspell. DC versus Marvel kind of thing. It's very serious.
Okay, I didn't...
Star Wars, Star Trek.
I was not aware of that musical thing.
I invented it because Jesus Christ Superstar is much more famous, but I've never seen it, and I've seen Godspell like so many times.
Oh. Well, which one do you prefer?
Godspell, because that's the one I know. Oh. And so I think I invented this rivalry, but now it's a thing. I've made it a thing over the years.
Jazz, was it a which story would you like to see turned into a movie or TV series, and what would be your choices for cast, direction, setting, etc.?
This keeps going so poorly.
Let's ignore any stories that I've created myself.
Yes, we want to see something where gingerbread men make vicious mutants that can talk. And then eat them.
TV series. Story. Story.
I would love to see Dresdenfels get another shot. I don't think it was done justice in the TV show that they did. And neither did anybody else because it didn't last. I feel like Dresdenfels is a very good one for that. I think a lot of the paranormal investigator ones would make good ones. Matthew Swift... who's Anita Blake?
Who would you cast as
Harry Dresden?
Yeah,
Paul Blackthorne. Give him another try. No, see, and here's the thing: I would fucking cast James Marsters. The problem is, he's a little too old now.
Yeah, he's old now. Yeah.
But you know, CGI that shit.
He would have been good.
He would have.
That's for sure. Yeah.
And yeah, he totally would have fit the bill, and he's from Chicago. It's hard to say now. I think some people have done some Anita Blake casting before. I think I've heard Marina Sirtis, Marina Baccarin. I don't know. There's a lot of these shows, sort of these private investigator ones that I think are really good. Book series that are inherently episodic to begin with, I think make good TV shows. They don't often seem to be the ones that are picked up, Lemony Snicket notwithstanding. People get ones that have much bigger, more overarching stories. But what is one that I would really like to see?
I want to see a Camelot TV show that's kind of a cross between Vikings and Game of Thrones and Last Kingdom. You know.
They did it. It was called King Arthur and the Knights of Justice. I sent you the link about it.
I want it to be set in, you know, around 500 with all of that stuff authentic and everything. I want them to figure out a way to tell the story the way it, you know, in the proper time frame. And but I would like there to be like magical elements, you know. I mean, Merlin... Mm-hmm. is a prophet and he sees visions and stuff. I want that to be part of it too. That's why I say crossed with Game of Thrones. But I want someone to start thinking, well, how would we portray this historically? And what historical period would it be in? And then sort of overlay any supernatural or magical elements over that.
Yeah.
I would love to see that. And I don't know. I don't really care who directs it. I mean, as long as they're competent at directing TV shows. But for cast, I mean, I guess I'd want it to be something that British people make, because I think they would care about it a little bit.
Scones.
But I would probably care far more about who is cast as Guinevere than I would care about who's cast as Arthur. I also wouldn't want there to be... I'd want him to get rid of the whole thing between Arthur, Guinevere, and Lancelot. Yeah, I'd want to get rid of that. Because, really, it seems like the older story is with Tristan and Isolde. And Lancelot, whoever made up Lancelot, just sort of stole a whole bunch of stuff from that. So it's like, just leave it. Leave it with Tristan. Make an interesting story with Mark of Cornwall and all that betrayal over there. Just because if you did Tristan and Lancelot, it would just be two of the same thing in the same show. So you have to kind of pick one. Either you're not going to have Tristan at all.
You're such an Arthurian nerd.
I'm just saying.
Don't be so derivative in your Arthurian TV show. Actually.
But I like... But I'd like Guinevere to be, you know, that it's an opportunity to make Guinevere super cool and do a lot of interesting things, because she does in some of the stories. There's like specific scenes where she does something that's really neat, but then she never does anything again. It's like, you know, you could make a whole show where she's always doing cool things, and Arthur and everybody else. And you could work in some of the best stuff. You could get the, you know, Gawain and the Green Knight. But I
the Sorcerer.
I don't really have any ideas about casting, even for Merlin, like, you know, but it'd almost be cool if everyone was cast like a new actor. Well, they'd have to be, because if they did the TV show right, the first time you see Arthur, he'd have to be like 15.
Yeah, no, I want, in that show, half of them have to be Tatiana Maslany.
Exactly. Yeah.
I am in a part of Orphan Black I am not happy with right now.
But Merlin would be the guy, you know, you'd have all these new actors who are really young, and Merlin would be the person you cast who's a veteran or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And who that would be, I don't know.
Oh my God. Over Christmas, I watched a movie called The House That Dripped Blood.
Yeah.
It was an old 1970 British horror film. And here's the thing. It sucked. But it had everyone in it. And not like before they were famous. Like, these were big names at the time, and it sucked.
Mm.
It was technically a compilation story. It was all these flashbacks to terrible things that happened to these people in this house.
Mm.
And each one was its own sort of story, but it was all because they rented this house, and this house was bad. And the first one is Denholm Elliott, who... Because I am who I am, I mostly remember as the butler in Trading Places.
Okay.
The British guy. But he had a long and storied career before that bullshit
in
Britain. The next one's Peter Cushing.
Oh.
Without Christopher Lee.
Like they're a pair, huh? A match set.
And the next one is Christopher Lee.
Oh.
Without Peter Cushing. And the last one... Ingrid Pitt, and also John Pertwee, a.k.a. the Third Doctor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was really pretty bad.
Mm.
I was surprised. I mean, it was entertainingly bad to me, but it was pretty bad. That was weird to watch.
So if you were casting Merlin, and he's got to be, at the beginning of the thing, he's got to be like in his early 30s, he also cannot be too old.
Shit. Because there's a bunch of ones that I would have cast like 10 years ago. Because like, well, and like back in the day, I mean, and don't get me wrong, it was horrible. But Sam Neill was a great casting choice in his version.
Mm.
His version sucked, but it wasn't his fault. I think he's a little too old. But Peter Serafinowicz, I think, would be great.
I'm not
great.
Sure who that is.
Oh, crap. I'm trying to get... Okay. In Shaun of the Dead, he was the roommate that's not Nick Frost.
Don't remember
him. In first Guardians of the Galaxy movie, he was the second in command after Glenn Close that like sacrificed himself in the line of the things.
I kind of remember him, but I don't.
He in John Wick 2, he was the sommelier. He's in a bunch of things, and he does comedy pretty well, too, but he can be a very serious actor.
See, people want to cast Merlin as super old, but he actually, if you do it right, he should, when Merlin's like 15, I'm sorry, when Arthur's 15, Merlin should only be maybe in his 30s, 35, 40.
Give Eddie Redmayne a couple of years. I'm willing to give that a shot.
Who?
Eddie Redmayne. Hmm. Everything. The main guy in Fantastic Beasts.
Him. Oh, ooh, that would be good.
I'd give him a couple of years, but he's a little big right now, and that's bothering me slightly, but I think he could pull it off.
Now, they tried to do a Camelot thing recently, and Fiennes, what's his name? First name?
Oh, Ray Fiennes?
Yeah, he was Merlin.
Yeah, was that the Guy Ritchie thing?
No. This was a TV show. They tried to make a TV show.
Okay.
It wasn't that great, but I liked him. Mm. But he would be too old now, I think.
You know what I would actually really like to see? Except there's only like a 1 in a million chance they do it right. Aeon Flux.
As a TV show?
Yes. Here's the problem. We throw the movie out. The movie has nothing to do with anything. Makes no sense. Okay. Sucked. Terrible. The original TV show was really nebulous.
And bizarre, actually.
Yes, and every episode didn't necessarily make a successful continuity with the next episode. I mean, there were elements that tied in, but it was really hard to get a cohesive narrative out of it.
Right.
But the concepts they were dealing with and the world building they were doing was amazing, and you could really do it justice now. But you'd be walking such a fine line because you would absolutely have to solidify the story mm-hmm. without doing whatever the fuck the movie did to make it so shitty.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely the visuals in the Aeon Flux movie were good. The cast was phenomenal. That movie sucked. So you'd have to fix that. Just Peter Chung stuff in general. I'd even go for the Rain, The Conqueror, which was his. It was another animated one, a la Aeon Flux, and it was a weird, vaguely sci-fi-esque telling of Alexander the Great. And that too, I think, would be fun. But again, that was one had a consistent plot. But it's still tricky to be like, what happened exactly? Because it did a lot of philosophers as weird magic users and things. Like they were using the mathematics to unlock magic powers and shit like that, which is always something I've had a fondness for. I wrote a short story years ago about taking a math class so advanced that essentially you learn magic, and I always thought that would be really cool.
I wonder if Isaac Asimov's grand thing with the Foundation and the robot novels and the Empire, if someone could figure out a way to make maybe a 10-season...
That would be tricky, mostly for the fact that I don't believe Asimov set it up that way originally. I think he retconned some shit later.
Oh, yeah, he did. But it would be interesting to... I'd never really thought about that before, but if you could make a 10-season, 10-hour... episodes per season, you could map it out.
Yeah,
I wonder if you could make something pretty interesting and compelling from that material.
You could. I don't know. Asimov is a little bit the Beatles for me. He's very important. I'm glad he did everything he did. It doesn't do a lot for me.
Well, of course, I love him, but
yes, but
and there
are a sad and lonely man.
Again, don't really care about who's cast except the main artificial intelligence. You know, character.
Has to be voiced by Alan Tudyk because he's not going to remember he already did it.
Well, he could play. Now he could just play that character. Looking like him. Because he would be good at that.
But he still might not remember. You know what TV show I would really like for them to do? Season 2 of Powerless.
Yeah.
That would be a great show, man.
I thought Powerless was good.
I absolutely did too.
It was silly and
I was kind of pissed off. And also because I really wanted Ron Funches to get a regular gig.
I thought it was fun.
Ron Funches, I loved it. Ron Funches has a special coming out on January 4th on Comedy Central called Giggle Fit. We've got it set to record on our DVR. You should check it out because Ron Funches is fucking hilarious and the nicest man in the world. We are super over time, so do your own Golden Girls Mad Libs and join us in the new year out on the lanai.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.